Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
I want to start this evening with our good friend John Best from the Bay Observer. Got a bunch of things in this city that I want to talk to John about today. John, how are you?
Well, Scott, good to be with you.
Good to be with you as well. Appreciate you jumping on board here. Just before we get to a couple other things, the city today had another, I think it's the third emergency in-camera meeting about what is going on with the cyber thing. And my understanding, I was not down at City Hall today, but talking to my colleague Tevye Mora from The Spectator, meeting is done. They did a few little things. Still no price tag, still no real information about a lot of things. You and I have talked about this. I've written about the communication side of things. Are they doing okay with communication, or is this still a problem that you go into an in-camera meeting and apparently there's, from what I can see, almost nothing said when they come out of it? Is this a whiff? Should you do something, or is it okay just to say, we're in camera, don't worry, trust us, it's all good?
Well, I think they should strategize even before they go into the in-camera meeting. I'm not so much bothered by the fact that they may not be able to say certain things given this particular situation, which is very unusual. But they should definitely have something to say other than we're passing a motion to keep everything confidential. I mean, there's, anybody that's done public relations will tell you there's all kinds of ways of saying nothing. And yet you still convey a sense that you do have that obligation to speak to the public, that can't provide much information. But, there's ways of at least acknowledging that the public does have a right to know something. They did have a more productive news conference last week with the city manager and the mayor. And, that was quite reassuring. And of course, in your column, the mayor made the point that she acted against advice in letting it out that they hadn't paid a ransom. So I don't know what happened today. I don't know whether council was simply being sort of formally advised of what we heard last Friday, frankly. That may be one of these situations where, we did a public news conference. We didn't actually tell council, and maybe it's cleanup, or maybe, they had some new information. But, the public, I think, is starting to see things functioning at a relatively normal basis. Maybe the public concern isn't as great as we think it is.
Really quickly, we are told that the people who are behind the homeless encampment at City Hall are going to get a meeting with the mayor today or tomorrow. I think it was today that was supposed to happen. Look, people can take their shots at the mayor for speaking or not speaking. I did, for sure. I do think, and I don't know what you think about this, I do think it's smart of her. I don't know if the timing is right, but I do think it is smart of her to speak to these people. We saw what happened when the prime minister wouldn't talk to anybody during the trucker thing. I think that was a mistake not to speak to anyone. I think the mayor is right. Whether what she says to them, what she can offer them, I don't know. But I think it's a wise move to speak to them. Or do you not agree?
Well, I think it's wise of her to speak to them. I'm just not sure it's a homeless encampment. I went by there a couple of times, and yes, there's tents, and yes, there's people, but this looks more like some kind of an activist thing disguised as a homeless encampment. And I think staff hinted at that when they said, this is more for bylaw than it is for our housing unit, our homeless unit. They're posting political signs. They got loud music going. It doesn't feel like a real homeless encampment. It feels like, and it's interesting, that this thing popped up right after the controversy over the two parking lots in Stony Creek. So I'm sure if we scour the place, we'll find somebody who's genuinely homeless. But I think there's something else going on there, Scott.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. And my issue is not, I don't think the mayor should go out there with a sack full of goodies to offer. I don't know that she should be offering anything. But I don't have any issue with the mayor for something like this on this kind of issue going and talking to them for a few minutes, not for the half the day or anything, but go and have a 10 or 20 minute meeting. I don't think that hurts anyone, and I think it makes her look connected.
Yeah, no problem with her interacting with them. I just question exactly what is going on that
100%.
City Hall forecourt.
100%.
I don't think it's... you know, they moved a genuine homeless encampment out of that area months ago, and this thing just seemed to spring up full-blown with all the bells and whistles in a very short period of time. So I'm skeptical.
Yeah, and I really hope that what doesn't come out of this, and we haven't heard anything about it yet, I really hope that, as I say, the mayor doesn't go and say, oh yeah, we'll give you bathrooms and showers and make this as comfortable as possible for you to dig in even more and have even more people come and set up in front of that place. That to me would be a mistake, but for her to talk to them, I have no problem with that. I think politicians, especially at the municipal level, should be talking to people who are in situations, whether they're protests or just constituents, and these are constituents, so I got no problem with that.
Yep.
John, yesterday I was just, you know, scrolling through social media on Twitter, and I saw a post from Ward 12 Councillor Craig Kassar, and it was about the carbon tax, which of course has been an issue of great discussion the last little while. And it says, Polyev ignores the fact the vast majority of Canadians get a bigger payment from the feds than they pay via tax starting April 1, a family for blah, 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 goes on from there. And whether you agree with him or whether you disagree with him, the Parliamentary Budget Office would seem to disagree with this. But regardless, it brings me back to a question I've had for a long time, because over the years, we have seen municipal politicians who officially are not partisan. They officially don't work for a party. Municipal politics in Ontario is a non-partisan, officially, level of politics. We have seen politicians, city councillors, dip their toes into commentary about provincial or federal politics and give themselves the appearance, whether it is fair or not, give themselves the appearance of supporting one party or not supporting one party. I've never thought this was a particularly wise thing to do for municipal politicians. I think the idea that they are not partisan is a good thing. Do you have a problem with this, or do you say, yeah, whatever, fine. If they want to support a federal Liberal or Conservative or NDP, whatever, do whatever you want.
Well, I would never argue against anybody expressing a political view on any topic. But, you know, if you're in municipal politics, I think you run a risk of pigeonholing yourself. Why necessarily share on an issue over which you have absolutely no influence, why tell a large swath of your constituency where you are on federal or provincial politics? Just speaking broadly, it tells them maybe something they don't need to know.
Well, yes, and you know, at a time when we are as politically divided as you could possibly be, and people tend to be very dug in, I don't know how it helps any of these municipal politicians to essentially cut off a chunk of the voting base who now all of a sudden think, oh, he's a Liberal, oh, he's a Conservative, oh, she's an NDP. And if you don't like that party, you've probably just lost a whole bunch of votes. I don't get it.
Yeah, well, it's, I think it's up to the individual councillor how they handle that, but you're right. At the municipal level, I think people are more concerned about, the local issues. And certainly with this council, they're not always on that page. We're fighting the climate war here in Hamilton almost single-handedly, it would appear. And, we're conducting war on cars. We're traffic engineers. We're doing all kinds of things that are kind of disjointed. And if you look at social media, I think the public sometimes gets fed up with it.
Is it just, though, when you say that it's up to the councillor that they can do it if they want, but do they have a bigger responsibility? And what I mean by that is I know that, Andrea Horvath, this was a big issue in the election, the question of, will she be able to get along with Doug Ford if she wins? Well, she has won, and I think she's shown, yes, she can get along with Doug Ford. She's worked with him, it seems. But I just wonder if you are, if you have a council with a number of people who look hostile to a certain party, if it really helps. Like, it's fine to say, okay, that's my point of view, but when a bunch of them do it, does it not send a message to certain parties that this council doesn't like us? Does it not potentially hurt the city?
Well, I can't go that far that it would actually do damage to the city, but I think what we're really talking about now is just this harsh polarization at whatever end of the spectrum you're at. And I think about it because I wrote a little piece about Roy McMurtry's death this week. And most people say, who the hell's Roy McMurtry? He was 91 years old when he died. But it just harkened back, when you look at his career, it harkened back to a kind of politics that is absolutely gone now. And that's that sort of bipartisan, where people were polite, there was wit. You know, when people got up in the legislature, the House of Commons, they could express themselves in paragraphs without having to read talking points off cards. Didn't have all these communications people hovering around. And there's kind of a hard edge to, whether it's local, provincial, or federal, people are just so wedged into their own point of view that some of the real art of politics is kind of lost, because partly because people are, quite frankly, providing too much information about their beliefs. And, you know, there once was a time when people kind of minded their own business, you know, and that's another lost art, unfortunately, with social media.
Well, look, social media, there are good things about social media. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. There are. The one thing is, and I think you just say it, I don't know that a local politician, or frankly anybody, it's not just them, has to say everything that comes to mind. And that seems to be sometimes what ends up happening, is where you might have just let something slide by before. Now you feel you have to comment, and then that's written down forever for you. You're locked in.
Yes, and that's the other issue is, you know, especially if you're using social media and you're a frequent flyer there, some of that stuff can come back to haunt you. Look at Sarah Jama. Look at the stuff she got nailed for long before the invasion in the Middle East. Stuff that she had said a year or 2 years ago, and it was a major issue in the campaign. It didn't prevent her from getting elected, but it certainly kind of put a tinge of, okay, so we know who she is. So yeah, your old social media postings are really a bear trap waiting to jump at you.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, we can have this debate all day long about whether or not various politicians, especially municipal, should be dipping their toe into these other levels. Because you're right, John, 100% you're right. Everyone's got the right to make their comments and state their views and align with whatever party, or say they support or don't or whatever. 100% the right is there. It's a question of, is it the best thing to do? And I'm not sure, but that is John Best. You can read his stuff at the Bay Observer. It's always a good read there. John, thanks for doing this today.
My pleasure.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
What happened in the House of Commons yesterday? A lot of people who were watching, a lot of commentators, choosing a variety of words to describe it. A farce is one of them. A waste of time is another word. Political theater, lots of different things. Whatever was the point of what was supposed to happen didn't happen. So those who were on the extreme view of wanting the government to declare for Canada to recognize a Palestinian state didn't get what they want. Those who didn't want anything to do with this didn't get what they want. As I say, it was a bit of a show. But as this is all going on, I couldn't help but thinking that, okay, so we got the NDP coming in with this motion saying they wanted a clause, a motion calling for Palestinian statehood that Canada would then recognize. And I got wondering, all right, how would we react in this country if the U.S. Congress, or if the government of France, had a motion in their houses of government and passed something saying We demand, we recognize the government, the country of Quebec, for example, or the government of the country of Alberta, or whatever you want. And I got to believe that we wouldn't be too excited about this. And so should that determine or should that dictate how we handle things like this down the road? I don't know the answer to this one. Dr. Robert Hewish is an associate professor with the Department of International Development Studies at Dalhousie University. He joins us now. Doctor, thanks for doing this today.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me by.
How do you think we would react if all of a sudden, say, France came out with a motion saying we've decided to recognize Quebec as its own independent country?
Yeah, wouldn't that be the end of diplomacy there? And that is something that historically has happened from time to time when there has been a non-recognized state that gets the nod from a foreign power. And from there, it all breaks loose because you basically say at that point that you're unwilling to have dialogue with the other side. Now, in this case, the geopolitics of the Middle East between Palestine and Israel would mean that it would be an immediately severing relationships with Israel in that way. It would also be something that some would declare as rewarding the actions of October 8th. And, you know, when you have states sort of coming down and recognizing movements or which is ultimately the opposition, the belligerents of the current war in Israel between Israel and Hamas, is that it validates them. It gives them recognition that isn't universally agreed upon. And it's something that really complicates the diplomatic war.
Well, and many people are saying exactly what you're saying, is that it is whether it passed or not, in whatever form, it is recognizing and giving credence and giving fuel to the people who committed these acts back in October. But again, I keep coming back to this idea that we're nudging our nose into something that let's say it had passed. Let's say this original motion had passed. What true impact would this have actually had to help anybody over there?
Well, if we're thinking in the hypothetical, which yes, can be dangerous to do in politics, but if for example, a country were to say that Palestine is a recognized state,
yes,
then the corollary of that is that whoever is currently in charge of that state would be recognized as a formal government. Now that's where you get into some pretty murky waters quickly, because there's not much appetite in the international community to recognize Hamas as a legitimate governing body of Palestine, right? There's the current war that's gone on, but there's also a decade plus of internally orchestrated suffering that's gone on to the Palestinian people by these guys. So that's the second thing. And now after that, if you do recognize that a state is in a state of crisis, then you have an obligation at some point to offer outreach in some ways. So what would that look like? How would that possibly be coordinated between the government of Canada and, say, a group like Hamas that's, again, to repeat this, its sole agenda is the elimination of Israel? So I think when you step back and come back into the context that we're in, so whatever multiverse we're living in, this is the trail that we're on here, where we see now, and in terms of critique against what happened in the House of Commons, the question should be, how did that question get to a vote in the form that it was? Because it was going to run in to these impossible tasks. The question could have been rephrased as, should one day, or dependent on these conditions, put some more language into it that under the right circumstances, this could be a topic of discussion. And that is actually a good point, because when you see some of the proposed peace brokerings that other countries from Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the US, and I believe the United Kingdom has chimed in on this as well, is to say that we need to really rethink about how Palestine and Israel are organized. And is it just about land settlement? Is it about territorial claim? What do we need to do? And what a lot of energy right now, especially coming out of Washington, is to say that there needs to be a transition in leadership on both sides. So Hamas needs to no longer be in charge of Gaza. And on the same token, Benjamin Netanyahu needs to no longer be in charge of Israel. And there's a lot of internal political opposition forming against him from the centrist parties in his coalition to the Orthodox, right? He's now toying with the idea of saying that students at seminaries and who have got religious exemption from being conscripted into the Israeli army, that could be temporarily overruled. Mm. So he's losing a lot of favor quickly. And it's something that Washington is sort of gently nudged at to say that it would be a lot easier if Benjamin Netanyahu is no longer in charge of Israel. And if there's any sort of peace brokering to come, that would mean that Hamas would have to depart as well.
Okay, but based on what you said just a moment or two ago about if we had recognized this government and that country that they represent is in crisis, we must step in to do something to help them. Hamas is currently, I'm just looking at it right now, Hamas is currently listed on the Canadian government, on the Canadian government's website, of the named, you know, terrorist association. So had this gone through yesterday, we would have been in the position where we would have been, what, obligated to then help a group that we identify as a terrorist group?
Yeah, indirectly, yes. That's exactly what it would be. It would also require a huge amount of policy machinery to basically readjust the declaration of Hamas as a terrorist group. Because again, if you are recognizing a state, you are recognizing its territorial claim and its leadership claim, its system of governance. And I think it's just really, really hard right now to say that you could even make the case remotely that Hamas is a legitimate form of governance in Gaza. The world's pretty united on that. But you know, this is the thing about, maybe it's even a nod to why our system works, because something that unchecked as a legislation didn't make it to passing. And that's probably a good thing. The sentiment behind it is a different question, right? That could there be a two-state solution down the road? Could there be better recognition that the people who are born on their land have access to their land and have autonomy over it? And these are sort of fundamental rights that I think were trying to be loaded into that question. But when they actually got into the point of debate, that was lost, because you have to take the moral clauses of the situation and park it to your legal and international obligations. And that's, you know, anyone who's been through, through a court system realizes that, you know, courts don't always determine who is the victor and the villain. They find justice, and justice can be something that's very disappointing at the end for everybody.
And just before we go, I mean, let's go back to where this thing started from. And again, I cannot help but imagine that if some other country had decided that we are going to suddenly recognize Alberta as its own country, there are many people in the House of Commons, and I would hope this would be the case, and around the country, who would freak right out, because they would say, it's none of your bloody business what we do here. Let us deal with our problems, unless you plan to come in militarily, which is even worse, or do something else. It's none of your problem. Leave us alone to figure out our issues. I don't know if it's similar, but it seems kind of similar to say, we're going to tell you how you should operate.
Yeah, and that's something that when we look historically, countries have done that in the past, especially in the Americas. You look at many countries in the Caribbean and in south of the Rio Grande, into Central America and South America, where there has been that direct interference, right? Where governments have backed one group over the other. The U.S. has done that repeatedly. You look at the Contras in Nicaragua, and you look at the Bay of Pigs in Cuba, where they were saying, we're going to back these guys over here who are declaring sovereignty over the entire place. And that's where you really get into some big conflicts. So it's something that just doesn't work with the machinery of government today in peace times. And it's something that, as you say, if another government was to try to carve out a sovereign territory or recognize a sovereign territory without going through the United Nations, without going through the Security Council, you're essentially backing insurrection. And I don't think any country in the OECD, G8, G7, Commonwealth, any of the international binding organizations would ever tolerate that.
Dr. Robert Hewish, University at Dalhousie University. Really appreciate this. Great chat. Thank you for doing this.
Great. Thanks so much indeed. Talk to you next time.
You're listening- listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
You probably noticed today on the news, you probably heard here on CHML, you may have read something about it, or just through the grapevine, you may have heard about the Jewish Film Festival that was supposed to be going next month here in Hamilton. And yet within the last day or so, the organizers have been told that the theater, the Playhouse Cinema here in Hamilton, will not be having that happen, that they have canceled this. Presumably, as we understand, because there have been some threats or complaints or something that has led them to believe that it's not wise, feasible, safe. I'm not sure what the right word is to go ahead. Well, this has, of course, led to all kinds of commentary online. Social media has been going wild today with people talking about this. The man at the center of this, who is the CEO of the Hamilton Jewish Federation, his name was Gustavo Renberg. He joins me now. Gustavo, thank you for doing this today.
Thank you, Scott.
You at all surprised about the reaction online and the amount of reaction? Because it seems like an awful lot of people have an awful lot of things to say.
I'm not surprised about the comments. I think that they are. It's important for people to participate and have something to say. I'm really shocked about the situation in general. I think this is really concerning. This is concerning in many, many different levels for the Jewish community, for the city in general. That's really, you know, gave me some really concerns. I'm really worried about this.
Who do you, I don't know if the right word is blame, but let's use blame for a second because I can't think of a better one right now. Who do you blame for this? Are you pointing the finger at the theater owners and operators mostly, or are you pointing your finger mostly at the people who made these threats or complaints or whatever else that led them to this decision?
I don't like to blame the theater yet until I get more information from them. The problem is that the theater was put in a very, very difficult situation based on ignorance, based in hate speech that we unfortunately cannot control. I think that we have to give some responsibility to the people who wrote letters and who complained about the Jewish Film Festival without knowing what kind of Jewish Film Festival we are presenting, saying that, okay, there's three movies from Israel, so this is Zionist propaganda, without knowing what the content of the movies are about, without knowing that there are two movies from other countries, you know, talking about Jewish issues. But for some reason, you know, these people decided to put some pressure on the theater, put them in a very difficult situation. And I have to tell you that the people who lives close to the theater or lives in that area, they don't have anyone to talk. If you live in that area, you will talk to your MPP, you will talk to your MP, you will exchange some, letters or communication with them. But in this case, it's extremely difficult because we know very well what kind of position the MP and the MPP have in relation to the Jewish community and to the Israel situation right now, to the Israeli conflict. So the theater, it's put in a very complicated situation. We, the Jewish Federation and the Jewish community, have to try to understand why this really happened. I think that it will be very important for us to know exactly who wrote these letters, who signed those letters, and also make those people responsible. I think that the actions of the theater are a reaction to that. But yeah. But both are making the wrong decisions.
Yeah, and here's the thing, is that I don't know the owners of the theater. I've not talked to them. We invited them to come on today, and we didn't get a response. I don't know them. I know it's a really easy thing always for everybody to throw around names and to say they are this or that. I don't know. I don't know them, so I can't say that about them. What I will be comfortable saying is I have a huge... So I don't know whether I'm blaming them or not, but anyone who would send a letter, complain, write a threat, do anything like that, those people, absolutely, I have a problem with. And those people, I think, have huge problems. And those people, frankly, I don't know how they're... Maybe they will be dealt with. Maybe the police will investigate. But that, to me, is where the real problem is. The theater, I'm going to reserve judgment on why. Because if they thought somebody was going to blow up the theater or that threat was there... Now, I can almost kind of, Gustavo, understand their concern, but the people who threaten to do that, that's where I really have an issue, and that's in the community, it seems.
You're right. For the letters that we saw, the threats were not about that.
Okay, okay.
The threats were more related about showing Israeli Zionist propaganda. And the theater owners are afraid of a protest or people being outside the theater during the festival or any kind of actions that can take place after the festival. Okay.
Who cares? Who cares? Isn't that? I mean, first of all, there's protests all the time anyway these days.
Yes.
And second of all, you know, I've spent my life as an adult, every time we hear about some artist who does some piece of artwork that is offensive or whatever, we hear, well, art is supposed to be challenging. Art is supposed to be uncomfortable sometimes. Surely if it's not a threat to do something horrible, if it's just that there could be a blowback to this, that's not
good. And the other thing about art is that you choose the art that you like to see, correct, or experience. So why were depriving another sector of the community to have access to this movie or to this festival? It's up to you. You have the right not to go, but I have the right to go. At the same time, I don't have to feel bad sharing that I'm Jewish and I am Zionist and I pro-Israel because I know exactly what Zionists mean. So what's the problem with that?
Gustavo, do you think that, and I absolutely have an answer for this in my own mind, but if this was not a Jewish film festival, if this was, I don't know, let's pick another group that occasionally or often gets harassed or has racism or whatever. Let's say it was a black film festival or an LGBTQ film festival or whatever else, and there were complaints. Do you think that it would be stopped?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not, because there's another level here, Scott. The level is like all the human rights organizations in Hamilton, like the ARC or what else, like No Hate in the Hammer, they will be part of not canceling that festival. You know what I mean? They will support the black community 100%. And this is not happening with the Jewish community.
As they should, by the way, as they should.
Exactly. Exactly.
As they should. This is not about saying the other group shouldn't have it either. You should be able to, no matter what group you are. Have any of those groups, by the way, those local groups that are often standing up against hate, have any of those groups reached out to you?
None.
Does that surprise you? Because that's what they're supposed to be all about.
Listen, it's not the first time that we face difficult situations being Jewish, and it's not the first time that we are not hearing from them. And you know what? Something is very important here. Silence and indifference matters. It's a very difficult message to receive that you're indifferent to this, that you don't have nothing to say, especially if you are a human rights organization. Okay, so that's part of the problem. So as you can see, This conversation is great. As you can see, there are very different levels in this decision, and many, many people involved, and many, many people are not involved. That part of the problem too.
Well, and it's not just here, Gustavo. I mean, look, I was just this afternoon watching the, I can't remember which minister it was. There was a cartoon in La Presse, in the paper in Quebec today, that even the paper, apparently, even the owners of the paper have now said was outrageous. But the minister, I can't remember what minister she was asked about this and wouldn't even come out and clearly say this was horrible, just that, well, it was bad timing for this with everything going on. It just seems like it's an awful lot of places these days where you can't get a clear answer.
It's awful. The worst part is that everyone saw the caricature already, correct? Great to have the apology, but the damage is done.
Yeah, and I mean, I want to give credit from what I read, unless I misread this, from what I've read, the owners of the paper apologized. Absolutely. It was not a fake. They said there was a breakdown here and this should never have gone in. And so you're right. It should never have happened. But I at least applaud somebody who would say we blew it, period.
Absolutely.
No excuses. But for a politician, a federal politician, to be asked about this and not be able to say something as equally clear, seems to tie in. There's just an awful lot of stuff going on all at once.
It's very difficult. It's the Jewish community, what we're experiencing, not only in Hamilton, you know, it's in the country, worldwide. It's really complicated. It's hard to see this happening when you compare what's happening today and you think about 80 years ago when Jews were allowed to go some places and not, and now we are telling that we cannot be part of a theater or we cannot. You know, we have to find a different place to present this cultural event. It's really hard to digest.
Once this is passed, will you attempt, I know that you're planning to now hold this at your own new facility, right? You've got a new building or something. Would you try in the future to go back to local theaters and try and get something like this put into a theater? Or is it just too much bother at this point to even try? Let's just do it ourselves.
Well, the intention of having the film festival in a public space is not only for us. It's to give the people the opportunity to share this, to give the general public the opportunity to come to see Jewish films, conversations, discussions, have a chance to participate. I have to be honest with you. I don't know. You have a very good question. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I don't know how we're going to deal with this in the future, because we cannot be, you know, until last minute waiting to see if this is going to happen or not, they are going to cancel or not. So maybe the only opportunity that we'll have is to do it in our center, in our facility, and open the doors to everyone. But at the same time, I think that it's a problem, you know, especially now when we have to deal with many, many, many extra issues. Like, security is huge and it's expensive, and it's time consuming. So if we don't have the protection that we need, if we don't have the support that we need in order to go outside of our doors, I think we have to do it different. We have to change. And it's unfortunately, because I don't like to feel isolated. I don't like to feel that I have to hide my identity, the Jewish identity, in order to present these kind of programs. But if we're going to have this kind of reaction, it's make it very difficult.
One more thing today, and we got to run, unfortunately, but I asked you if any of those groups that generally, you know, work against hate had reached out. You said no. I saw a tweet from Dan Muse, who's the MP for Flamborough. I can't remember now, but have you heard from, on this issue, any city councillors, any other MPs, any other MPPs?
Not yet.
Not even your own MP, not your own MPP in that ward where the theater is or anywhere else, not even your own ward counselor?
No.
Nobody.
Nobody.
Do you expect to?
Of course.
We will see.
We'll see. Maybe call me tomorrow for another interview.
Hopefully. We'll I sincerely, now I know, to be fair, I want to be fair about this. To be fair, I know that our city council has been in an emergency meeting about the cyber thing for most of the day today. Sure. They've been tied up. Sure. So I don't want to be, you know, saying something that is unfair to them because they may not have had a chance. But I do hope, Gustavo, I really do hope that somebody or a number will say something either publicly or to you, because I think that would be the right, honestly, would be the right thing to do.
Scott, let me say something really important that I forgot to mention.
Sure.
This is really make a difference. Like, I have to say that the Hamilton Jewish Film Festival is presented and supported by the city of Hamilton. Okay? So we have their support. They understand that this is an important event for the city. And we know that we have their support. So I'm pretty sure that they will contact us. I mean, they were busy with other things right now. I expect the contact for sure. But I really like to clarify that they are one of the sponsors, if not the bigger sponsor, of the Hamilton Jewish Film Festival.
Fascinating. Gustavo Rindberg, CEO of the Hamilton Jewish Federation. Thanks for doing this today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Scott. Thank you for your support.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening. And do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.